that I was asked about a week ago, which I thought was a very, very interesting question, and it has to do with Hilchos Avelos. I'll describe in a minute exactly what the scenario was, but let us just give a little bit of background before we get into the question itself. So Avelos, as we know, is something that really has a source in Chumash itself. In Parsha Shmini, that we're going to read in just a couple of weeks, we know that Aaron HaKohen's two children pass away, Nadab and Abihu, and after that, Moshe Rabbeinu instructs Aaron that he should go about his business as usual. And Aaron says back, "V'achalti chatas hayom hayita be'enei Hashem." Does it really make sense that when I'm here in the state of mourning, in a state of Avelos, should I really go ahead and have the regular engagement with the Karbanos and eat the Karbanos as I normally would? Is that really what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants of me when I'm in a state of Avelos? And that is a source that we certainly find, that Aaron HaKohen describes himself as being an Avel, and therefore he cannot do the regular activities that he normally is expected to do. We find the Torah itself talks about how far we expect an Avel to go, so much so that the Torah says that even though a Kohen is not allowed to be Metame Lameis, even though a Kohen is generally not allowed to attend a Levaya or go into a cemetery, when it comes to a situation where a Kohen loses a relative of his, we assume that he has not only the right, but he has an obligation to go ahead and be Metame himself, because we assume that Avelus is something that we have to take very seriously. The truth is that this dates back way earlier. We know that already by Yosef HaTzadik, when his father passes away, Yaakov Avinu, so it says, "Vayas la'aviv evel shivas yamim." Yosef declares that everybody has to be in a state of mourning for 7 days. And that is the first time in Chumash that we really find that there is a mention of Avelus of 7 days. But the truth is, the way that the Halacha sees this is, that although Yosef already told everybody in his community that they have to observe 7 days of Avelus, that is not the real mitzvah midaraisa. There are many who assume that Avelus Yom Rishon is daraisa, the first day when one is an Avel, meaning the day of the death and the day of the Kvura, that is considered to be a din daraisa. But after that, Moshe Rabbeinu was mesaken that we should have 7 days subsequently in which we are noeg dinei Avelus, and that is really where it starts. So this is a very age-old minhag. From the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, we already have this practice of having 7 days of Avelus. According to the Halacha, according to the Torah itself, an Avel has to observe Avelus only for 7 relatives. Who are those 7 relatives? Either a father or a mother, a brother or a sister, a spouse, either a husband or a wife, and a son, Rachmana Litzlan, a son or a daughter who pass away. The parent has an obligation to observe Avelus for them as well. Those are the only ones that we have a real obligation to. And the Shulchan Aruch, when talking about Hilchos Avelus, says, this is not optional. This is not voluntary. A person doesn't decide, well, I liked my brother, I didn't like my brother, I liked my parent, I didn't like my parent. You have an obligation to observe the dinim of Avelus, and it's considered to be an absolute obligation. If this was your parent, if this was your brother, if this was your child, you have an obligation to go ahead and keep to the laws of Avelus as we know them. So the Rambam writes, Kol misha eina misabel, kimosha tzivu chachamim. Once we know that there's this idea of Avelus, and there are very strict guidelines of how an Avel is supposed to behave during that period of time, says the Rambam, if somebody chooses not to be misabel kemoshe tzivu chachamim, somebody chooses to disregard this law of Moshe Rabbeinu, harei ze achzari. What kind of person are you? You had this relative in your family, and you're choosing not to highlight the fact that they passed away. Rather, says the Rambam, what a person should do is they should be noeg Avelus as the Chachamim taught us, and yefached v'yidag v'yefashvesh b'maisa v'yachzer b'tshuva. The time of Avelus is a time for a person to be serious about life and to think about how fragile life actually is, and how at some point in life we're all going to have the opportunity to have a din v'cheshbon with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is something that the Rambam highlights here that we need to think about. At the same time, the Rambam in the very next halacha says, yes, you have to highlight the fact that there was a loss in the family. And this is not voluntary, this is an obligation. And if any of those relatives pass away, everybody who is a close relative must make sure to be noeg Avelus. However, the Rambam says, Al yiskasha adam al moso yoser midai. Don't take it to an extreme. The Chachamim said, there's a process, there's a way in which the Avelus is supposed to be observed. So for the first 7 days, you observe the Shiva. And it says, Shlosha yamim lebechi. And after that, you have the Shiva and the Shloshim and the Yud Beis Chodesh, and it's supposed to be a gradual process, weaning the person away from the loss slowly, slowly, but bringing a person back to where they are supposed to be as a functioning human being. Says the Rambam, if a person is miskasha al hameis yoser midai, the Rambam says, zehu min haga shalolam. You have to understand, this is what happens. This is life. People unfortunately pass away. V'amitzar atzmal milenko olam hareza tipish. What, are you going to be angry that the sun rises every day and the sun sets? It's nothing to be angry about. Are you going to be upset that things happen in the world? This is the way life works. So yes, right now it feels horrible and it feels difficult and it's something you should feel right now. But as time moves on, says the Rambam, a person has to understand that you have to learn to live life and to move on, even though you have suffered a tremendous loss. So the Shulchan Aruch says, on top of the mitzvah of Avelus, the Shulchan Aruch writes, we also have a mitzvah, lahaspid ala meis karoi. We have a mitzvah also to give haspedim, and to show our respect to the person who passed away, and to highlight some of the qualities of the life that they lived, and share those qualities with all those who are here to celebrate the life that they may have lived. And therefore the Shulchan Aruch there tells us that a person who's giving a hesped, who it's a very difficult and a very hard task to do properly, Shulchan Aruch says you should say Dvarim HaMishabri Masalev. The point is you should really break the people who are listening. We should cry. That is the point. When we sit at the Levaya, we are supposed to cry Kedei Laharbis Abachia Ulahazkir Shivcha, and to highlight the great accomplishments of this person. In fact, the Radvaz has a very surprising tshuva where he talks about an Adam Gadol, where he says that there was a person in his community, I think he says, it's in Chela Gimel, if you want to look it up, Simen Tav Kuf Nun Hei. The Radvaz actually describes the whole thing, and he says, a person lost, Rachmana Litzlan, he lost a child. And he said, I'm a believer, and I'm a believer that everything Hashem does is for the good, and therefore he didn't cry when his child passed away. And throughout the duration of the Avelus, he didn't cry at all. And people thought it was very strange. And they asked the Radvaz, how can it be? This man doesn't cry when he loses a child, and he's telling all of us that he's such a great person, and he has so much amunah, and he believes that it was for the best. And the Radvaz writes that he thinks this is not something to be proud of. He says, Zu midara mora al koshi halev. It doesn't show that you are a mamin b'HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It shows that you have a stone heart, and it shows that you have no feeling, and it shows that you don't understand what life is all about. Va'aroa tchunas ha'nefesh v'hi midas achzarius v'hi derech ha'filosofim. Says the Radvaz, this is unacceptable. When a person passes away, it's supposed to be a painful experience, and we are supposed to cry. Does that mean that we don't believe? Of course we believe, but we are human beings, and our emotion takes over, and it is expected that at the time of loss, a person is going to be taking it in a difficult way, and it's not something that a person should be expected to just not cry about. The point of the Hespedim is that one should cry. And then the Radvaz writes, Haboche umisabel umore demos ala krovim. If somebody cries, as they are supposed to when they suffer a loss, V'kol shekein al adam kasher. Let's say it's not a relative of yours, but it's somebody who you respected very much, and now you attend the funeral and you cry, says the Radvaz, midas hachasidim unuviim v'anshei maisu. That shows that you're an upstanding person. It shows that you have feeling. Umore al taharas nafsho v'achnas libel if nekono. It shows that you have a humble spirit, and it shows that you have a very special side to you. V'yisabel al avonosav ashohayu lo sibel azeh. So that is what the Radvaz writes about this. But now we get into our question. I was asked last week, very unusual circumstance. There was a couple that got divorced 30 or 40 years ago. At the time that they got divorced, the couple was already in their 60s, I think. And the woman said, I have no plans on getting remarried. She wasn't interested in getting remarried. I don't know why. But she said, there's no reason to go through with a get. So all they did was they had a civil divorce. And the husband never gave his wife a get. Not because he didn't want to, but because she said, why should we pay to go to Beis Din and have a get written? There's no purpose. There's no reason to, because I'm never going to get remarried anyway. That's what she said. Now, 30 years later, or however long it was a very long time, her husband, her ex-husband, passed away. And they have not had anything to do with each other in the last 30 years. They had a very amicable divorce and everything was fine. But now they went their own ways and he died at a ripe old age or whatever it was, 90 years old, I'm not sure. And now his children are sitting Shiva. And somebody came to the Shiva and asked, doesn't it make sense that your mother should be sitting Shiva? After all, she never got a get. So she's still officially the wife of this man. So it was an unusual story. The children never even knew the backstory. Why would they think to ever ask, did our mother have a get? Why would they think so? Now, it just so happens to be, even though she might be 80 years old, now she's able to marry a Kohen, because she's an Almana and not a Grusha. So that's an interesting perspective. But leaving that perspective aside, would a woman like this, who's technically divorced from her husband, but not really, meaning she's halachically still married to him, but hasn't had anything to do with him in the last 30 years, should we assume that she's still considered to be a wife and therefore has to sit Shiva and be Noeg Avelus for him? Or perhaps you would say that is unreasonable. It's a very interesting question. And the truth is that Rabbi Kiva Eger mentions this case in Shulchan Aruch. If you look hard enough, you find the Acharonim talk about everything. So Rabbi Kiva Eger on Shulchan Aruch, where it's supposed to be in Siman Shin Ayin Dalet Hilchas Avelus, he writes, in the name of the Yamshel Shlomo, that he believes somebody who is biktata imishto, somebody who had a major fallout with his wife, and then umesa mitoch haktata, in the middle of the fighting, they're filing for divorce, and then she passes away. Says Rabbi Kiva Eger, in the name of the Yamshal Shlomo, Eina Misabel Aleha. He is not obligated to be Noeg Avelis for her, because after all, she didn't consider herself my husband. I don't consider myself her husband. She's not my wife. We're already holding my divorce. We're at the ninth hour already. There's nothing that's going to change anymore. We're already filing the papers. And just because we're technically husband and wife, it doesn't mean that we have to be knowing the normal rules of Avelis, because for all intents and purposes, we are no longer considered to be husband and wife. Now that doesn't mean, don't get me wrong, doesn't mean she has a right to go and get remarried before she gets the get. Obviously not. And in fact, the Acharonim ask, well, it seems to be problematic, this psak, because after all, the Ramah writes in Evin Ezer, what if you have a case like this, and we're filing for a divorce, and it turns out that the wife passes away? Would the husband get the Yerusha? After they're already divorced, obviously she has her own bank account, he has his own. But while she's technically still his wife, and now she passes away before we had a chance to do the actual get, would he be able to take her money or not? That is a question, and the Ramah says, it would seem that Afal Pisha Nasav Enav Lagarish, says the Ramah, even though we're filing the paperwork and it seems that we're going to get divorced, Yorsha, says the Ramah, she unfortunately will pass away then, he will have the right to take her accounts because she's still considered to be his wife. Well, that seems to be a stira. If you're still my wife for the money, why are you not my wife for the Avelis? So this is a question that the Achronim deal with and the Pischei Tshuva discusses it. Why should we draw a distinction between that case of taking the Yerusha when he has every intent to divorce his wife, and our case here where we have a situation where he doesn't have to be Noeg Avelis once he's in a situation of wanting to divorce his wife? Now, there's an interesting question, nothing to do with a couple, but there is an interesting question that is discussed about what happens if I was very close with the person who passed away, but I happen not to be a relative, and I want to volunteer to be Noeg Avelis for them because I felt like a family member. So you have this every so often when a child wants to sit Shiva for an adopted child, and for the parent that adopted them, they want to sit Shiva, which is the respectful thing to do. After all, they raised you, they paid for your education, they did everything to make you the human being who you are, so maybe we should say, even though it's not your biological father, but maybe you should sit Shiva. But it can come up when you have situations where somebody's a very close friend. Should they be allowed to be Noeg Avelis or not? That is a big discussion in Shulchan Aruch as well, in the Shach and the Taz and the Pischei Tshuva, all talk about the provisions for that. However, what I do want to highlight before we close is there is a major discussion in Shulchan Aruch, and this is something that unfortunately some people are not so careful about. What happens when a couple is filing for a divorce? I know I'm talking about a little bit unfortunate circumstances today, but this was the shaila that came up. So a couple that's filing for a divorce, and they have not yet technically gotten divorced, and now they want to know, do we have a right to still live in the same house? Is there an issur of yichud for a couple that's getting divorced to live together in the same house? Obviously, once they get divorced, they're not allowed to be together in the same house because they're no longer related to each other. And certainly, even though the Achronim say, even though there are many, many kulas that we have in Ilchus Yichud, for example, if you leave the door open, or if Baila Ba'ir, if the husband is in town, it's considered to be less chamor, less severe. Here, in a case of a divorced couple, if she gets remarried, let's say, and her husband comes over, her ex-husband comes over one day to have a talk with her, and even though her new husband is in town, which normally is a heter, Baila Ba'ir, so you don't have to worry, the Achronim say, since we have a relationship that's a long-standing relationship with each other, and even though we got divorced, but we do have a very casual relationship, therefore we would say the general kulas that we rely on should not be relied upon here where you have a divorced couple who gets back together. But what about before the actual divorce happens? Is there a problem for the two of them to live in the same house? Is that a problem of yichud, or would you say no? The two of us are still married, and until the actual get is given, until we're finally divorced and we have the get kahalacha, there would be no problem at all of being together in the same house. This is a very interesting question that was raised by the Maharsham. And the Maharsham says there, what if you have a woman who's so angry at her husband and she wants nothing to do with this marriage, and therefore she says, I'm not going to the mikveh any longer. I'm never going to go to the mikveh again. I don't want you to touch me. I don't want you to be near me. I'm happy to be living in your house, but I don't want to have anything to do with you. So I get the free rent, and I get whatever else comes along with that, but I don't want to have any connection with you. Ask the Maharsham, are they allowed to actually live in the same house? After all, the Gemara wants to know, what right does a husband ever have to be in the same house as his wife who's a nida? So a woman 2 weeks out of every month is a nida, and her husband is not allowed to be together with her at those times. Why aren't we concerned about yichud then? The same way that a husband is not allowed to be with someone else's wife who's an erva, so to his own wife, who is at that time an arayus, he shouldn't be allowed to be in the same house. Says the Gemara, come on, we're married to each other. So yeah, I have 2 weeks where I'm not going to be able to be with her, but I know that in the future, everything's going to be okay. She's going to go to the mikveh and we'll work this out, and therefore, we're not concerned that the yichud together is going to lead to something else. It's what we refer to as pas b'salo. He knows that in the future, we're going to have the opportunity to be with one another, and therefore we have no concern about yichud now. However, writes the Maharsham, if a woman says, I absolutely refuse to go to the mikveh and I will not change my mind, maybe in that case, he says, one has to be very careful. And one has to be mindful of the fact that there might be a yichud issue in that circumstance, which unfortunately comes up very often today. When you have, let's say, a woman who's not well, and she's therefore not able to go to the mikveh, and she never will be able to because of whatever condition she has. So the question is, what do you do about that? How do you deal with the fact that the husband and wife are staying married in the same house, which they should, obviously, they should stay married, why not, and he should take care of her. But what about the fact that she is a nida, and the Gemara says the only right that they have to be together when a woman is a nida is because he knows in the future things are going to work themselves out, but sometimes they have a situation where they can't work themselves out, and she's not able to go to the mikveh. This is a very, very unfortunate question, but unfortunately it comes up every so often in our community when you have somebody who's sick, and they're not able to go about doing things the way a regular couple would be able to live. However, in our case, many Acharonim say, when you have a couple that's filing for a divorce, would there be an Isser of Yichud or not in that case? The answer that many suggest is no. Why? Because in such a case, again, there's a huge machlokas, but many suggest that, yes, if the couple decides they have a change of heart and they want to be together and they want to, you know, live with one another again, she has every right to go to the mikveh. Nothing's stopping her from doing that. So since technically it is pas b'salo, because if she would just make the right decision and go to the mikveh and do that for the betterment of both of them, then it would take care of all the issues that we have. So therefore, perhaps the laws of Yichud would be lifted in such a scenario. But it's a very interesting story to be aware of. And again, I learned a lot from this Rabbi Akiva Eiger when he talks about this obligation that a couple has to sit Shiva for each other when they're not really technically married. Would it be something that's obligatory? Would it be something that we don't have to worry about? Again, there are many other ways to go into this discussion. As we mentioned before, how does this tie into the money and the Yerusha and other things? But for now, I guess we have to dive in.